listening to the Tennis.com podcast. And here's your host, Ed McGrogan.
Hi, guys. Welcome back to the podcast. This is Ed McGrogan here with Steve Tigner, catching up after one third, roughly, of the 2015 Australian Open passing us by. We're into the, as of this recording, about half of the fourth round is set. The rest of it will be set probably by the time you listen to this. And it was more than overdue to kind of catch up on what we've seen from a tournament that has been, I think, pretty overall pretty dramatic for the most part, even though some schedules haven't seemed at face value to be really compelling. Every day has kind of brought us something to take away, in my opinion, Steve.
Yeah, it seems like the matches that you wouldn't really expect to be good have been good. The Nadal-Smicek, Sharapova, Panova, and then Federer-Seppi and Dimitrov-Baghdatis. I didn't really expect those. I expected those to be pretty one-sided, and they've all been very exciting and almost they all there was one upset and a couple near upsets.
Yeah, the it's funny you mentioned that Dimitrov-Baghdatis one right away. I mean, when I came into looking at day five, it was to me on the outset just really a table setter to what would eventually become two really outstanding fourth round matches in this loaded fourth quarter. And what we got was Dimitrov, to me, really kind of playing pretty passively against Baghdatis. I mean, Baghdatis can, especially down in Australia where he has great support, he can kind of turn it on, at the right time. But Dimitrov, to me, didn't really impress in that. And then, that was really kind of just the beginning of the day, because Federer, ends up going down to Andreas Seppi in four sets, against someone that gave obviously an even more inspired effort. So, some changes, but, those two guys right away just, stuck out, of course.
Yeah, I hadn't expected Baghdatis to give Dimitrov that much of a match. I guess I've seen Baghdatis lose too often in the last few years, and he did end up losing this match in a sort of typical way. He just couldn't win the big point when he needed it, but he played well. And then Seppi, there's just no way to have really believed that he was going to push Federer or beat him. He'd lost 10 straight matches, one set in those 10 matches to Federer. You could see he's a good player, and you wonder why he wasn't able to do any better against Federer. Federer even himself said that he respected his game and always thought he was a good player, but he obviously could never do anything against Roger until last night.
Yeah, Seppi, to me, he kind of bucks the trend of the more flashy Italian players. He's, to me, kind of really more of a meat and potatoes guy, and he has posted some pretty good wins over the past 4 years or so, but really this is at the point of a slam where you kind of figured it was his ceiling that he hit. To me, this loss for Roger is one of the more surprising of his early round slam losses of late, because in some losses, particularly I'm thinking of like Sergei Stakovsky at Wimbledon, Robredo at the Open a couple of years ago, you kind of knew that Federer just didn't have it on that day. And yesterday, Federer had a pretty poor start, a lot of errors and such, but he really did seem to kind of get the match back in his hands in the third set. And he had leads in the fourth set as well, but in kind of an instant, it really just turned, and it was he dug too big of a hole, it was just too late. But I thought, in that respect, it was kind of even more surprising to see a guy who was 0-10, finally get a win over him.
Yeah, I don't. Federer didn't play well, but he wasn't as bad as, like you say, some of the matches he lost in 2013. This match was one he would. I think we've seen him win this type of match a lot, playing sort of making errors, but then maybe winning, pulling out the tiebreakers, coming up with big serves in the tiebreakers and winning the match that way, getting through that way. It looked like he was going to do that. He was up 4-1 in the first set tiebreaker, 4-1 in the first tiebreaker, 3-1 in the second tiebreaker. But I felt like Seppi just And those moments played better. He really just raised his game at the end of those two tiebreakers. Federer didn't come up with the huge serves that he usually does. He double faulted in the second tiebreaker, but Seppi put the ball on the line a lot when he needed to. He said he'd felt more calm than any match he'd ever played in his career. So, you know, I'd say you'd have to give him credit for winning those few points that maybe Federer would normally win. Afterward, Federer said, I won the wrong points. And I think that's, you know, a good way to describe it.
Yeah, it's been written a couple times, but he actually did win one more point than Seppi the whole match and you know, goes down in four. The serve, I very much agree with you saying that, you know, that is a hallmark of Roger, especially at the slam, especially in the early rounds of a slam, just, you know, always being able to kind of call upon that shot to really just, you know, get him out of trouble a bit, and that just wasn't the case today here. You know, by my count now, I'm pretty sure that in the last 20 Grand Slams, Roger's won one of those tournaments. So it's, you know, this run of him keeps going as, you know, when you compare it back to obviously his greatest years, you know, the titles certainly are becoming more and more infrequent. You know, it's still strange to say that when you look at the year he just had and most wins on tour, a number of, you know, very prestigious titles. And, you know, I still do expect this year, you know, he won the tune-up event right before the Aussie Open pretty convincingly too. You know, I still kind of expect, you know, a good showing from Roger this year. I do think that, you know, Wimbledon's pretty significant now when it comes to, you know, the majors. Of course, I don't think you can expect Roger to kind of, you know, pick one up at the French here. And you know, by the time he gets to the U.S. Open, he's going to be 34. So I think, you know, if we're looking at it from that sort of perspective, I think that's the kind of top of line view of where Roger Federer stands.
Yeah, you wouldn't say, I don't think this is a match where you would say, oh, now he's declining, he lost this because he's aging. I don't think you can say that having watched this match, but it just becomes a matter of time and how many more Grand Slams is he going to play in the future? How many more chances is he going to have? It's, like you said, it's 4 months now until the French Open. By the time he plays the last slam of this year, he'll be 34. You know, it just gets to be a matter of time and a matter of slams that are left. He's not playing just to win the Grand Slams, but I think we could say that he would feel that it wouldn't be a great success the last few years of his career if he wasn't able to pull one last one out. He's won one in the last 5 years. That has to be something that he considers.
Absolutely. Let's switch course to the women right now, and in particular the round of 16 that has been determined thus far, and that's the bottom half of the draw. It's quite a mix of characters we have here, with Sharapova, Halep, Bouchard, you know, advancing. The other top seed, Ekaterina Makarova, number 10, is in the other matchup, and you have joining them, we have Julia Gerges, Yanina Wickmeyer, Arina Begu, and Peng Shui. So it's, you know, to me, it certainly looks like this is a quarter that that Chalk could really, you know, do some damage. I think you do kind of end up with some pretty nice quarterfinals here. And to me, you know, the other big takeaway thus far this week has been the continued success of Halep and Bouchard, who obviously, you know, had a really great years in 2014. And with that, some pretty big expectations coming into this season. You know, thus far, both of them have looked fantastic.
Yeah, I was sort of looking at Bouchard as somebody who might have a letdown after the, not just playing so well last year, but sort of becoming a big star. It would make sense for her to have something of a letdown this year. You know, not in this tournament. She's shown, as like she did at the Slams last year, she can beat the people she's supposed to beat and play well at these events. She's looked really good. I think a lot of people were looking at her last match against Caroline Garcia as a dangerous match. Garcia had been playing well. She had won their only previous match, but Bouchard won, you know, won the second set 6-0, won it, you know, running away and looked like the much better player.
Pretty important match, I think, overall for her to win at this early juncture of the year.
Yeah, I think that, you know, that keeps her, it's as far as like another young rival, that keeps it, that keeps her ahead of Garcia and sort of keeps somebody else from becoming, you know, the new sort of newsmaking young player. And as for Halep, she's sort of had her moments in this tournament. I feel like when she's hasn't played well, when she's gone off a little bit, when she's looked a little nervous and rushed things, but she still won. I feel like we could see that again from her. Maybe she was up 5-1 in the second set against Bethany Mattek-Sands. She lost the next four games to make it 5-all before winning. I don't know if that's a great sign for her, but you know, I think she I'm looking forward to her playing possibly Makarova in the quarterfinals. I think that's a good, you know, that's a that'll be an interesting matchup. And of course, Bouchard could play Sharapova in the quarterfinals. Obviously, also a you know a pretty big match.
Yeah, of course, for sure. And you know, Sharapova, as we've said, comes from two match points down to avoid a huge early upset. You know, Anna Ivanovic was the number 5 seed. She went out on day one, and it appeared that Sharapova was about ready to join her on the outs, but you know, comes through with, you know, two great points down two match points against Panova.
Yeah,
there,
we'll see. You know, last year Li Na was down a match point early in the tournament, saved it, and won the tournament. Of course, that doesn't happen every tournament, but it could be where Sharapova sort of feels like she has a second life in this tournament. Though she does have a tough match next against Peng. That's not necessarily that easy, and it won't be that easy for her. She'll have to play, you know, much better than she did early on.
Yes. Peng won to me, who has made, you know, noise at slams before against top seeds. I would like to, it would be rash to not mention two of the Australians that are still around. And, you know, one probably is not a big surprise, Nick Kyrgios. Perhaps it is a surprise because we didn't see a lot from Kyrgios really since the U.S. Open last year. But Kyrgios has, you know, during a tournament where the expectations, or really not necessarily the expectations, the hype is certainly there, I've got to think that if I was down in Melbourne, it would be pretty tough to avoid seeing, you know, some things touting, you know, obviously their next great player. And you know, he is all the way into the second week of the slam here. You know, the other one, certainly a big surprise, is Bernard Tomic, who has made his way to the fourth round, looking, you know, pretty much the opposite of Kyrgios, Thanasi Kokkinakis, the other Aussie youth who, you know, did pretty well. You know, I think a very sort of studied and just a different Tomic than we've seen at previous Opens. You know, the talk before the event and going into it was that perhaps Bernie sort of kind of realized where this stage of his career is, and he always has brought it at this event, and this has been, I think, one of the most impressive stories really of the first 5 days. He gets, you know, Thomas Berdych next, and you know, for both these guys, it's a pretty great story.
Yeah, I think Kyrgios, it's almost as if what's impressive is how, you know, how sort of routine he's made making the fourth round of a slam look already. Pretty good win over Ivo Karlovic. That takes a lot of patience. And I think we were wondering whether he would make it to a fourth round match against Federer, but it's Federer who doesn't make it to play him. Kyrgios now has, obviously, the draw has opened up for him. You could even anticipate, you even look forward to a possible semifinal against Nadal. And Tomic, like you said, looks much better. This is the story every year, it seems, with him. He likes this part of the season. He likes playing at home. He likes, you know, this Aussie run, but he does look better. He looks fitter. He looks more serious. He's played well. He has a win over Berdych. But I still like Berdych in that match. I think Berdych is also a guy who's starting the year well with a new coach. seems to have a better attitude right now, seems to be playing really well. I like him to win, but that's definitely a match of two guys who have suddenly look like they have new life this season.
Who do you like along those lines in the Anderson-Nadal match? Because I've really mentioned it for the comparison of Anderson and Berdych, and I think when a lot of us looked at the draw before, you could certainly make the case that this is a sort of that flame throwing opponent that Rafa could have trouble with.
Yeah, I think that's true. They've known each other for a long time. I think I still like Rafa in that match. I don't know if Anderson is really dynamic enough from the baseline. He has the height and he has the two-handed backhand, but I don't know if he's the kind of guy who can put the ball past Rafa sort of if he's hot for three sets on this kind of court. So I still like Nadal. He, like Sharapova, had his scare, and maybe that, maybe that helps your mindset. Maybe that helps make you relax now, and obviously looked really good in his next match.
Yeah, I mean, Rob, that was, I think, to me at least, a little bit of, I don't know if it should have been or not, but Rafa did really, it just really didn't look good for him against Svitek for a while, and turning it around to really have almost no trouble against Sailor in his third rounder. I mean, you do have to like what you ended up seeing from Rafa there. And that's kind of where, where things are at the Open. Is there any other things from the first part of the week that spring to mind, or some things that you're possibly looking forward to, in the next few days?
Well, I think, I think that, we'll by the time this goes up, we may not know the outcome. We may know the outcome, but Petra Kvitova and Madison Keys, they're going to play. We won't know who wins, but each of them has also, like Berdych almost, and a few other players, has looked almost like they've turned a corner at this early part of the year. So that'll be interesting. Whichever one of them advances, I feel like they look good for 2015.
Yeah, it's the night match tonight, and I think probably the best match of the day. Kvitova, to me, I am kind of all in on her this year. I think it would not surprise me if she won this event. It would not really surprise me if she won this year on the women's side. I'm gonna go with that and see where we go. But Keys has been strong, things happen at night at Grand Slams as we know. So with that, we will we'll touch base again as the later rounds continue to form at the Australian Open. So for Steve Tigner, I'm Ed McGrogan. Keep tuning in to tennis.com for more on the Aussie Open.
You've been enjoying the tennis.com podcast. For all the latest news and events, head over to tennis.com.